Ladies and gentlemen, get up. And who's that we can see just coming over the finish line? It's John Shield. John, how are you, mate?
I'm good, thanks. Yeah. Just crawled across the finish line, like literally crawling.
Yes. That was some epic finish. Now, before we introduce everybody who have probably been sitting underneath a rock, John Shield, if you can just give us a quick bio before we have a little bit of a natter at all things ultra and endurance racing.
Yeah, I guess started running probably about 3.5 years ago now, like many people. Lockdown sort of created the running bug, so to speak. I'd had an injury from the past, hadn't been running, managed to get that sorted during lockdown by seeing someone, the physio, that was great, got me up and running. And yeah, it just went on as a bit of an addiction, really, from then. So it became my drug, so to speak, and entered some races. Your Penlyn 100, got my backside handed to me by just being completely out of my depth, having probably run a handful of times, then trying to do your 100-mile race, which was my first 100-mile finish in something silly. But, you know, it was a case of a hobble and blisters and so on, not too dissimilar to this time. But, yeah, that was really where the thing started. And then I learned, got better at these things and kept learning, kept trying to push and train hard, and yes, started to get some results, put the results together, then went a little bit further afield to some more remote, hostile sort of areas, such as the Scottish Highlands, then the jungle, then the ice, ultra in the Arctic, and did pretty well winning those. Then had some good results back here last year in the UK as well. Obviously, winning your race, your Penlyn Winter, for the second time. And also things like a third at Lakes in a Day. And obviously, this year we've had the Spine Sprint, and now the one up from that, the Spine Challenge itself.
So, John, 3.5 years, that's an incredible amount of running, committed training. If anybody's a Strava geek, go and have a look at John's training. But if we go pre 3.5 years ago, what were you doing before that? What was your hobbies and what was your way of life, sort of thing?
I think I was working a hell of a lot, because actually whilst during COVID, I was working hospital based, so dealing with a lot of potential COVID clients. I mean, I was doing minor injuries, minor illness, sort of stitching people up, x-raying, seeing people with their illnesses and so on coming into the hospital. So I was traveling 86, 87 miles each way to work, plus doing a 12-hour shift. And I was doing that 5-6 times a week. I would come back, and that was when I was running between those times, get the dogs out and go and run with them down the canal or something. That was how it started for me.
And then, you know, before it started, were you into sports? Because you're a fit lad. What you know, were you into sports as a kid, or, you know, what was the progression, you know, through the various hobbies and trying different things?
Yeah, absolutely. I was actually allergic to running. I would hide in the woods at school when they had cross country on and just pop up at the end, sort of down the pack, just saying, looking like I'd done it, but actually I really hadn't. I'd just chilled out and waited for the good runners to go past, and then I'd bumble out of the woods like I'd done the cross country, and I just hadn't. I'd avoid all sorts of sports day running. I was mainly into football, rugby, cricket, anything basically sport wise I was doing it apart from running. And I did various things. I was county level rugby, and then had a little spell on trials in the first division. As I got a little bit older, I shot for Great Britain, target shooting in under 21 level from about the age of 13. got bored of it. It was pretty boring. And then, as I say, kept playing rugby, kept breaking my legs, ankles, and so on, and thought, well, you know, not getting any younger, I better sort of do something where I'm not going to be injured and out of sport for so long, because if I'm not doing some sort of sport, I'm pretty grumpy. So I did a lot of gym work, fitness training, and that was coincided with being in the fitness industry, having done a sports science degree, done some personal training qualifications, strength and conditioning qualifications. And yeah, I was just in the gym, really. Not necessarily the fittest, because I was lifting a lot of weights, using sort of for rugby. So I was probably about 15 stone.
Yeah.
And so on. And yeah, then I've always sort of kept a level of fitness, been out on the hills, mountains with the dogs running, but certainly nothing like I am now. Definitely the fittest I've been, put it that way, and probably the lightest I've been since I was about 12 years old as well.
Yeah, I've noticed the change, you know, since 2019, whenever you, you know, ran the winter. And I think from seeing, you know, it doesn't come overnight, does it, John? You've put in, you know, some hard graft. And in terms of your training, do you know, whenever you first started, say for somebody that, you know, is committed and driven, what did you do? Did you do your own training plan because of your knowledge from the PT training, or did you just try out a few things, or did you manage to get a coach, or how's that progressed?
No, I think initially I started running because I could, and there was no pain again, which was amazing. And so I just kept building up the distance, had the dogs with me. The dogs loved it, so it was great for them, great exercise. And I just found I was just going a little bit further than I would before. And I was like, great, that's it. And it just kept building up. And first week I'd done a marathon when I was back running. And I thought, oh, that's not too bad. We'll keep going. And then I thought, well, I don't want to do any sort of short, fast stuff, really. I like to see the place, you know, with the dogs. It's better if I can go on the mountains or, you know, trails and just develop that. So I had no sort of structure in place at all, apart from I was running and running decent, reasonable distance, decent time on feet. Nothing spectacular, but for me at that point in time, it was a decent level, and probably by most people's standards, a decent level of volume and fitting that around work. And obviously I went and did a couple of races, yourself, Michael Jones. I entered one of his, it's not done anymore. I'm trying to remember the name of it now.
Was that the trail, the Slate Trail?
No, it was the one he did, it's a couple of days. And I entered that, the name forgets me now, but I entered that and I just remember rocking up at from the distillery in North Wales.
Yeah.
And I'd done a 12-hour night shift. So I'd got my kit packed in the car before that, drove straight from the night shift, rocked up. And I completely just ran off nicely on the road at the start, thinking, oh, this would be a nice little jolly. And then straight into pathless, steep, horrible terrain over I was like, what the hell is this? I was expecting some sort of like nice marked out route, you know, and it killed me off. And like, I think it was the longest time it's ever taken me to do a marathon, because it was such a shock to the system. And literally at about my knee locked up and everything. And this is at about a marathon and about, I don't know how long into it, but yeah, it was a nightmare, but it really, really made me realize, actually, there's a bit more to this game than simply just going out for a bimble and, you know, just rocking up post work shifts and being fatigued anyway, and thinking you can go in and do all right. So I made a note of that and didn't turn up after a work shift again for something that big anyway. I still do occasionally, but not anything that I'm serious about or wanting to do well in. So yeah, I think
Do you have a coach, John, or do you work on your own plan? As in,
I'm so hectic and busy with stuff. It just suits me to train myself, and I'm still untapping so much potential and improvement. And a lot of that has come from, people don't like when you say like, oh, I'm losing weight to get to a running weight, but I had a lot to lose, and it doesn't come off overnight. It's something that's been progressive. I've done it over a long period of time. A lot of it has dropped off with mileage training, but I'm not training my upper body like I was. So I've not been doing that for a while. I love my weights. I love doing the strength training and stuff, but it's all running specific now. So when you don't lose your upper body mass that you've had for years from being a teenager, from doing a lot of rugby training and things like that, fitness training, to then all of a sudden getting a runner's physique, and I still look quite well built for a runner, ultra runner, but actually my weight now is coming down to something more approachable, and I'm certainly this year feeling the benefit of that and seeing, and not necessarily seen in my races yet, but the performance benefit I'll have going into other races, that it's definitely there. But yeah, my training now, it's all my own sort of tinkering and so on, which I love doing. That to me is probably one of the more enjoyable parts, seeing what people are doing, seeing their training, but then seeing how my training relates, and also tinkering, basically.
And me, with my sort of geek ears to the ground, listening to every word you said there, will there be a sort of John Shield coaching plan, or will people be able to sign up to John Shield coaching anytime in the future? Or is that just me dreaming?
No, dreams come true, Hugh. They do come true. I've done my USCA ultra running coach qualification now, on top of the other sports science degree and personal training and strength and conditioning coaches. So yeah, I've done that. I am starting the process to look at coaching at the moment. So
John, have you told anybody else, or can this be a world first?
No, this can be your world first.
Yes. I'm not being funny. I'm very excited. I'm gonna sign you up as a coach, not that I even run anymore.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, for me, if you've got somebody who's done the miles, but they've also done the science as well, it just makes so much, with somebody that wants to have a coach, it just ticks the boxes. And I think as well, which we'll go on to, you know, it hasn't all been, you know, sunshine and roses. You've had injury, you've had DNF, so you'll be able to pass that information on to people who are coming back from injury that want to be coached, or coming back from a DNF that want to be coached. So that's brilliant. That's brilliant. And then in terms of for yourself, you know, I've seen that you go running with a lot of other experienced ultra runners, but also with Scarpa. Can you let me know how you got involved with Scarpa, and where you went recently, and what hints and tips you might have picked up there?
Yeah. So with Scarpa, I just actually approached a guy called Dave, who oversees the UK part of it. And he was keen, because I, at the time, I'd done the Arctic and the jungle, told him what I had coming up and other things, and he was keen to work with me as I was with them. And so I tried their shoes, got on with them really well, and then we just formed that partnership and never looked back since. They've been brilliant, because I get these shoes, and they've particularly enhanced their range of shoes now, which copes with the UK weather, and there's some still coming out over the next sort of 6 months. But now they've, from being an Italian brand dealing with more your hard pack trails, mountain trails, you know, UTMB type stuff, now there's stuff that's suitable available to the UK for UK weather, which, let's face it, is a law unto itself. So yeah, it's excellent. And yeah, they give me loads of support, whether it's with races, and they've obviously got a big pull in Europe with races. A lot of our team have just been out doing Lavaredo this weekend, getting some good results in as well. So that's been great to watch and see and follow. But yeah, they took me out to Sardinia with some of their international athletes out there. And we had a bit of a meet stroke training camp, and the experience was amazing, literally around some of the world's top runners. And like you don't know who they are necessarily, and you're there running next to them and, you know, doing all right. I wasn't feeling disgraced at all. I was feeling pretty fit at the time because I was training for Ultra Trail Snowdonia. I picked up an injury actually, and then I missed that, but I was in some really good shape. And out there, it was brutal training ground, but, you know, I was doing my own stuff, then running with these guys, and you've got a guy who comes second in UTMB in 2021, wow. Other guys who are winning the World Mountain Championships, and, you know, all these fantastic runners, and I'm like around them, and they've all been doing the results since as well over the last few months.
And was there any, like, something that was quite noticeable or habitual with all these runners whenever you were, you know, out in Sicily with them, as in, you know, their warm-up or their running technique or how they dressed, or, you know, the sort of dialogue, you know, what was the sort of day-to-day of it?
You know what? I think if anything, they do less training. For me, it was a case of I probably train harder than them. And yeah. I'm not saying that in a big-headed way, but I know there's probably no one that will really train harder than me, given the time. I mean, these guys are professional athletes as well, so they do have recovery, a lot of them. Not all of them were professionals, but, you know, they don't have jobs to go to and so on, other than run, recover. And I think that's a massive part of it. If you've got the ability to not worry about getting your session in, that your session will be got in during the day, or your two sessions, and around that you're not worrying about being late for work or being tired. I mean, that's massive. But yeah, I think, no, they all seem really chilled out. There was nothing that I picked up there, and I mean, I ran with a couple of them in the morning as separate runs and stuff, and yeah, no, they, I think probably a big thing that from the UK is noticeable is that in the UK, the weather isn't brilliant. So you go out somewhere like that and it was quite hot. So the adaptation to the heat, which we just don't have in the UK, we've had it obviously last month, and
yeah,
people, and you'll hear Tom Evans, who's just won Western States, talk about this, is like your blood plasma levels and so on, that from being in the heat, your body goes through physiological changes, and it happens quite quickly. Heat adaptation, you're talking about 10 days to get full heat adaptation. But you get a load of benefits from that. So I think these runners are always running in shorts and t-shirt in beautiful weather, but they've got these steep sort of mountainous trails as well, that it's all on their doorstep. They've got the environment, which not necessarily is accessible to people in the UK the same. Obviously, yeah. Areas, the Lake District, North Wales, Snowdonia, Scotland. Scotland's not really accessible for a lot of people. But, you know, these areas where you've got the mountains, but then sometimes you're limited by the weather quite often.
Mm.
You know, to be safe, you can't always got the height, but it's not as easy to get on the trails, and you don't have that sort of weather. Whereas, you know, those guys have that, and then they have in the off season, is they're not running, a lot of them, they're doing schemo, and obviously it's a cross training, but they're at altitude doing that, so they're getting the benefits of being at altitude on their feet for a long time without the impact, the schemo, and they're just spending hours in the mountains, because it's easy to do that when you're out skiing and so on. It's a great environment and a lifestyle, I think, which, you know, it's just a little bit harder to do over here. So you have to go out and adapt to altitude, adapt to heat, and I think a lot of the runners in the UK that are very good probably struggle when they go out to some of these races beforehand because they don't have maybe the knowledge, but probably more so the time and ability to get trained specifically for the environment, which is something when I go abroad, I try and do to give myself the best best possible opportunity to do well. It's not always ideal, but generally I turn up quite well prepared for the environment, which when you're paying money to go and do these races or got it as an A race, I think that's just so important to do because otherwise you're never going to maximize your full potential. And unless you have, you know, possibly, as I said, with heat, you can be prepared in about 10 days pretty well. But for altitude, that takes longer and that's exposure. And, you know, if you're racing, my next race is at altitude. I'm already training for that with altitude training and I'm going to get some testing done and then reassess. But it's, you know, 2 days after the spine, I was on the bike and I'm training now specifically for that.
Keeping the legs warm and getting the turnover. And then for the likes of say like the UTMB, you get quite a few, as you say, athletes who have got it as their A race from the UK going over. I think, I don't know if you know, do you know Andrew Williams? He was in the UCS this year doing the short distance, I think it's the 27K. But he's gone out, he'll be there something like 4 weeks beforehand, as you say, to adapt. And I think especially if you're training so hard, it makes a massive difference to put yourself in the environment that you're going to be going on. Now, before we talk about your other race, can we just talk about the spine, John? The winter spine in January.
Yeah.
You won that. And then the summer spine challenger, you've just finished and won that. Now, talk me through, because I dot watched that, but for anybody that didn't dot watch, can you explain about where and what the spine challenger is?
Yeah, so it's basically a race that runs supposedly 108 miles, but it's actually longer. It's more like 110 the route this year. Or if you're me, you end up doing some extra hill reps where you're not supposed to do 112 miles.
Brilliant.
They spin it as the 108 mile Britain's most brutal race. And obviously they have some different distances, but this one was from Edale to Hardraw. Time limit of 60 hours. And yeah, it's a brutal race. I think from the start, you have to carry a huge mandatory kit list, which actually weighs a fair bit on your back. I mean, I got away with a 12 litre pack and then a little waist pack, which, you know, to carry food, nutrition, but there's a lot of kit because you are self-sufficient. You have one bag drop, which was at about 46 miles where you could pick up some more food, but you have no specific aid stations, water stops. So you know, you've got filters for water. There is water occasionally, but you can't guarantee where that will be. So you're generally filling up out of streams, or where I was at one point filling up and having to move some little ducklings and their mum off and along as I was scooping some water up and drinking out of that with the sheep that were lingering above, using it as their local potty. So you've got to be quite resilient. Obviously the heat and things, humidity were factors, and even thunderstorms in the race. I was here with Penny Gwent with thunder and lightning during the race, which was pretty brutal because it came on all of a sudden and smashed me for a few hours. So full warm kit, full waterproofs all went on, and that's why they have that kit list, is because it's no good just having a little warm top because it gets very cold, it's very exposed. But then, you know, unfortunately we've had a lot of hot weather as well, which makes it probably more difficult because you're changing in and out of layers, whereas in the winter I was in full waterproofs throughout and that was it, and I just chug along at a pace and that was that. Whereas summer, it's been interchangeable. So you're in and out of waterproofs, sweaty feet, blisters, but it's hard, hard rock, rocky technical terrain.
Yeah.
Which it's brutal on the body, for sure. And, you know, I'd recce the route bar probably a few miles into Hebden Bridge, where I'd obviously completed the spine sprint, which finished in Hebden Bridge. And then the checkpoint on from that was for the spine challenger was another few miles on. But God, that felt like a long way. I wish I'd known about that beforehand. So
yeah, talk to us about the last bit, John. What was happening?
Yeah, okay. So I'd set off at a decent pace. I felt really good. And I was cruising along. The aim was to go and break the course record, but break it quite convincingly. And right up to the first checkpoint, I rolled in there in under 8 hours, which was the fastest they've ever had anyone go through. And I felt pretty good, but I'd had some hot spots already that I'd noticed with my feet. And there's a few reasons, I think, for that now, but a lot of people suffered with their feet, I think. Obviously, it was humid out there, but socks I wore probably initially, they just felt like they were digging in a lot the whole time from the start, like I could feel every single thread.
Were they wicked and padded, or were they more?
They were specific trail socks, and I had had a pair of them before, and I've got a new pair deliberately to make sure they were as padded as possible. But I think I've been looking after my feet quite well with foot care and going and, you know, scrubbing them and so on. And maybe I'd scrubbed them a bit too much.
Right.
I definitely had my shoes too loose. I should have had them tighter. I only tightened them up at the checkpoint. I think I'd probably been moving around in there a little bit too much. And I used to have these issues when I first started running. And there's also some patches that I used to use to stop any friction. So I wasn't using those. I didn't take my feet because I haven't been. I've been in the jungle and not had the issues. So it was a bit of a shock to the system having that. But there's things that I think, right, I need to adjust that, learn from those for next time now.
Yeah.
I mean, there was hot spots. I could have stopped earlier, but there was nothing where I think, I can really stop and do something about it. So I continued, but I knew from checkpoint one I was probably going to have to manage stuff. So I eased off the gas a bit then, kept moving. But then eventually they did fill up underneath my sort of balls of my toes. I had the fluid buildups. So they were just like a squidgy sack of mush.
Nice.
It became more macerated as it went on. So I was, one of the mandatory pieces of kit is a needle.
Yeah.
So I was popping these blisters, squeezing them out whilst en route, but they were filling back up again, and you'd take them up and then they would, like, obviously just hold this fluid, becoming excruciating. So yeah, literally it slowed right down then. And for me, it was more of a case of, like with your race, that my aim for that race, the Penlin 100, was to do a 100 miler, to complete it, whatever. Yes. I knew I'd built up a massive gap by this point, but I'd had a shin injury, which I mentioned, from Sardinia.
Yes.
So I was concerned more about that before the race started, because I'd been doing a lot of cycling, not much running. And ironically, I'd taped my shins and had no issues with them at all, apart from probably near the end at 100 miles. But that was all related due to these blisters, because I was sort of standing on my heels, not putting my toes down, trying to dodge every rock going. Lessons learned. I was basically getting outpaced by some hikers towards the end. It was more a war of attrition. For 40 miles, I was probably in the most pain I've been in ever for that period of time.
Where'd you go, John, whenever, you know, people say the pain cave, I just use it as an excuse to go and think about happy things and stuff. Where do you take your mind? Where's John going when this happens?
I'm just thinking that, you know, I think about, well, hang on, I've got sponsors here that are supporting me. So, like, I don't want to let them down. Particularly when, like, the main sponsor, Montaigne, is sponsoring the event. It's like,
yeah,
you know, I've just joined them, so can't really do that. Can't give up, can't quit, you know.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, well, I'm in the lead here. You know, yeah, a snail could come past me at the moment, but hopefully this lead and everyone else is suffering as well. So maybe yes, I can offset that, keep crawling to the end, and we'll see what we see. So I definitely think that. And then I think, well, you know, I don't want to let down family members and stuff like that. And I think, actually, I'm really lucky I've got the ability to do this. There's people that can't do this.
Brilliant.
Yeah. So, you know, me feeling this pain, which is only going to be temporary, it might last a week after finishing, but I'm able to do this. Other people aren't. So I'm very lucky. I should be grateful. So stop moaning, get on with it, toughen up, don't be a little snowflake. And that's basically my self-talk. I met with one of my friends that you'll know yesterday, Julian.
He's legend.
The long spine, yeah, absolute legend. And we were chatting all things sort of spine and stuff like that. And he, because we took music, and I don't really listen to music, but I took music for this and had a little listen for a few hours. And my music playlist is very different to Julian's. I couldn't actually tell you what songs his were, but he had stuff that was like choir music going on. And I was like, that would make me DNF straight away. Like, literally, I've never heard so much dross. And then there's me that's pulling up, you know, random music out of the 90s, things that for me are like motivational.
Eye of the Tiger, bit of Bon Jovi,
all sorts of stuff. Yeah, all sorts of stuff. But then, like, listening to his stuff, I was like, how can that work for you? But he says, oh, no, it really works. And he goes, I must be weird, because then I'm there singing away. And I'm like, but how can you sing to that and motivate yourself? Because I was, so for me, I was just like, older stuff. That, so, you know, I'm putting stuff on, and it's like, we're getting into it.
Yeah.
You know, different things like that. And, just, you know, old school, I'm there like an idiot, sort of motivated. And he's there just like, let's say another one. Listen, there we go.
Oh, classic, John.
You know, Julian's looking at me like this, and I've got things like Cypress Hill, Insane in the Break, all these sort of things that I'm there like loving, like listening to, thinking, well, the pain is not so bad. And yeah, he's there listening to, I don't know what. You should
Nick
do a
Kershaw. He sent me Nick Kershaw this morning when I was chatting with him.
Yeah.
And he goes, have a listen to this. And that's, I think it's almost like, say, whenever a child has to have some medicine, you go, well, do you want a sweetie? And then you give them the injection. I think it's that ear distraction to get you into a kind of other place to get the, you know, look how lucky I am, this is only temporary. And then you crack on. But I think, yeah, it's that's brilliant, John. And then, so what was your time? What was the finishing time for the Challenger?
Oh, like this 27 hours 50, something like that.
That is incredible. That's incredible for that terrain.
Hours beyond what I wanted. But I, at the same time, it's probably the most proud I've been of a race, because I really had to suffer for it. The winter, shorter version, the spine winter was, I don't say it lightly, but comparatively, it was easy. I didn't have to change out of the kit. As I said, I just had a pace. And it was, right, that's the pace, I'm doing it. And, you know, it's 45, 46 miles. But it was relatively easy. Whereas this, I really had to suffer for a long, long period. And I mean, really, so I would have, if it wasn't an important race, I would have stopped at, yeah, mile 60, just thinking, you know what, that's all right, but because obviously it was an important race, and missing out on UTS through injury, I hadn't raced since January properly, so I wanted a big race and I wanted it under my belt, and a 100-mile race was something that I wanted to tick off successfully, and it's unlocked another level now for me, mentally and also physically, I think. So yeah, it's very positive.
Nice, John, that's fantastic. For anybody that's done the spine previously or has been following it for the last few years, it's just one of those races. Now let's go for fuel. I know you're with Voom. They're one of the sponsors here at the Pentland Ultras. Voom and your fuel rule, what were you eating, how often, and did you stick to your nutrition plan, or did that get sort of changed, or are you quite regimented with your amount of calories, your amount of carbohydrates per hour, and so on?
I obviously fueled with Voom, and it worked really well, actually. The only problem is with these races, you go on for so long, you can't tolerate the same things. And so for the first sort of 7.5 hours, I was just using the Voom Fusion Fuel liquid,
yeah,
which is 90 grams of carbs. You put it in a 500 ml flask. So, you know, there I've got 90 grams in that 500 mils. So I was making sure I was having over 100 grams of carbs an hour to keep up with the intensity that I was running at. So I'd be having that. And then as well as that, I was having, like, because it was a warm day, their electro bars, which quite refreshing, but they've also got the electrolytes in specifically as well.
Mm.
And then I was also popping a salt tablet just because of the heat. I wouldn't usually do that, but that was my nutrition pretty much for the first 7 hours or so. And then I sort of got a little bit short on water because obviously not knowing where the water stops are. After that, it became a little bit more difficult because your taste buds go off and you don't really want the same thing. So I ate a little bit of the checkpoint. And then I had some, like, these harder sort of total, complete nutrition bars, but something just for a different taste. But still kept on with the electro bars from Voom and the Fusion. But I sort of ran out of the Fusion, basically. I took a whole bag of it, but with the amount I was going through, I actually ran out. And because of the logistics of the spine race, that you can't get resupplied at a checkpoint every so often, all I had was some more at the 46 mile point. But then after that, to go the remaining mileage up to the 112 miles it ended up being, I didn't have enough ability to carry enough as well.
Right.
So I always knew my nutrition would change, but I was aware that my taste buds and things like that would probably change. So the first period was all about good fueling, 100 grams of carbs, even a little bit more up until that checkpoint, which went swimmingly well. And I felt brilliant. I felt really, really good. After that, I got things wrong at the checkpoint, tried to carry too much with me going out. My kit was a bit of a mess with that then. And so lessons that I learned there, basically. But
was that a fatigued mind making those decisions, John?
No, it's just learning that, you know, the spine race is a different type of race.
Yeah.
It's different to the multi-days that I've done, which is self-sufficient, where you're really organized with your kit. I was trying to calculate carrying what I would for the remaining, 65 miles of the race, food-wise, which is a lot of food and fuel, considering if I was at that checkpoint by before 8 hours, I wanted to go 21 hours, which would have been a couple of hours under the record, but I ended up being, nearly 28 hours. So I was there a long time without potentially food, fuel. So I was trying to carry all this stuff, and I carried things like salty, what are they called? Snacker Jacks, something like that.
Oh yeah.
Some nuts and more whole sort of real food as opposed to just sports nutrition. Just because I was aware that, A, it was going to be hot, so some salty stuff. thing. But to be fair, I didn't really fancy a lot of that. I mean, I ate the nuts and things, but my stomach didn't want much. I didn't have any stomach issues, and I never had any energy issues as such. I think it was more a case that I was just in pain. Otherwise, I'd have been floating along quite happily. I would have been finished a lot earlier. I had no issues with regards to that. The Voom stuff worked really well. I didn't get the cramps and things that you could have done with the weather. So, yeah.
It is a game winner, isn't it? I think, you know, as you say, your 100 grams because of your exertion, that's key. And then just quick mention on the on Montaigne and some of the stuff you were wearing. The Fenix Light, I've seen you with these torches before, John. What's the crack with those? Are they battery or charge up, or how do they work?
Yeah, so the Fenix, there's different ones, there's different types. I had their beastiest trail running one. And that is, you've got the ability to charge that via USB and so on, but then it's also got batteries it can take as well. So they supply a rechargeable battery, but you can also put normal batteries in as well. So it's a really versatile piece of kit, but the burn time on them is phenomenal. On a medium light of 400 lumens, you're getting 12 hours.
Wow.
So, you know, it's got a boost function of nearly 1300 lumens. So if you really wanted to light up something for a period of time, it's got that ability for a short period if you're on a particularly technical part. And then it's got another, the low light, it's 200 lumens, and that'll still do a decent job, and that'll go obviously a lot longer. So yeah, it's flood and spotlight as well, and you can use them both at the same time, so you can get a really good bright light, and sort of running in the dark is also a skill and a thing that can sort of influence the mind at night as well. Everyone slows down, but mentally it's harder. So yeah, they were really good. You'll have seen the Montaigne clothing that I was wearing, t-shirt pack and so on, which all worked really well. And then
the Montaigne pack, what one was that, John?
So it was the Gecko.
That's nice.
Gecko 12 liter.
Google that, ladies and gentlemen, and even have a look at this, the YouTube for it. Not that I'm a complete geek, but I'm a complete geek. As you say, the Montaigne Gecko. Well, the Montaigne spine is just a very, very, very long catwalk.
Pretty much, yeah.
But the, you know, Montaigne, they've been going for years, haven't they, John? And it's, it's kit you can trust. You know, I know people throw that around sometimes, you know, with any old brand, but with Montaigne it is, and the proof's in the pudding because of the spine. So yeah, you had the t-shirt, you had the Montaigne bag. In terms of the shoulders, did you get any rubbing, or the fit of it is nice and tight, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I mean, prior to being with Montaigne, the winter sprint, I had quite a lot of back rubbing. But this year, this summer I had zero on. And I think because I did sort of put a bit of anti-chafe gurney glue on my back shoulder area before the race, but I had nothing, no marks at the end of the race. It was really comfortable. It was well packed out. It was very tightly packed, fitting that much kit, mandatory kit in the pack. But then if you fill out a pack, you get less movement. So that's one of my take-home tips for people. Fill out your pack and then it doesn't rub and swing as much. But yeah, it was very comfortable. I chose that one over the Gecko 20-litre version for that reason, that it was going to be more snug and tight on my back. Whereas, obviously, I'm in Kyrgyzstan in a month's time, which is going to be self-sufficient five-day multi-stage. So I'm going to be going with one of their bigger packs. I'm just in the process now of testing what kit will go in it, how full it will be, and all those things that you need to factor in before doing the race for your comfort, but also trying to be as light as possible as well.
Now you've done that link, lovely. Whereabouts are you going again, John?
Seamless link. It's Kyrgyzstan. So
Kyrgyzstan, where is that for people like me who just glazed over then. Kinnick's stat. So where are we talking? Whereabouts in the world's that?
Yeah, it's God, you're getting me now. It is in Asia, I believe.
Wow.
Let me have a little look while we're talking. So I'll give you the official thing. It's a landlocked country in Central Asia. I was right, it was Asia.
Oh.
And so, yeah, it's the Tian Shan mountain range I'm going to. So I fly into the capital, Bishkek, and it's the largest city in the country, and then go from there. Yeah, so
apparently, who's organizing that race? Who's that by?
It's Beyond the Ultimate.
Oh, brilliant.
But yeah, so Uzbekistan is to the west.
Well,
here we go. Tajikistan is to the south, and China to the east. So I don't want to go wrong with where I'm going. But yeah, I'm running over the mountains there for 5 days, and I think the maximum altitude there is nearly 4,000 meters that we'll peak out at.
Oh, John, that's just pure filth. How many miles is it, kilometers or miles? The multi-day?
This is the kicker. I don't think the route's fully so, yeah, it's the first time they're running it, so. Chris King, the course director, he's a bit sadistical, and he likes to get the best out of these adventures. So he's doing a forward recce prior. So there is an official route out there at the moment, and it's about 200K and 9,000 meters of vert, obviously with heavy packs, and that's over 5 days. And I'd say the altitude, you're never below 3,000 meters. Which, if you look at the Alps, I think most of that's about 2,500.
That's mad, because I've just come back from Innsbruck and went up to Hodel, which is, as you say, broaching on 3,000 metres, and I got off the cable car, and I honestly thought my teeth were going to fall out because my fillings were so heavy.
Yeah.
How are you going to train for that, John? You can't just do that by doing hill reps in... hill reps... Yeah, are you gonna go out and do some altitude training in Europe and stuff? Or what's the plan?
No, I'm already doing it. I'm already started. I've got a generator. I'm already training. I'm doing my high intensity workouts. You'll see me on the bike at the moment. My Strava is basically when I put **. Hint giveaway for people that like to follow your Strava is that's me doing my altitude training at the moment. So I've not run the last week because of the spine. But I've been on the bike and I've actually been putting some pretty hard sessions in with a mask on, simulating altitude.
You've got a generator, John. What are you talking about here now? I said yes, and I was thinking, where is this in your house or your garage or
So I converted my garage outside into a gym. So I've got a treadmill that will go up to 40%. I've got all the strength and conditioning stuff I'd need, and I've got a Wahoo kicker bike, so that basically simulates going up and downhill and everything. And I've got this generator with a mask, so I'll put the mask on and I can set it to an altitude, and at the moment I've set it fairly low, but it means I can get some quite hard workouts in. So I'm at the moment about 2,500 meters, putting some hard efforts in, just trying to really ramp up my lactic threshold, but obviously get my body adapted to altitude. So I'm doing some workouts around about the hour mark every day, just with this mask on at altitude. It's pretty grim. It's pretty horrible. But it's hard training, which is what you need, and it'll feel better for it out there.
I guarantee you, the listeners, whenever you said about the generator, training the mask on, will have gone to Rocky 3 in their brain, and the Russian coming to fight Rocky. That's my visual image of you, John. And although I'm married, I've got two kids, I'm going to come and live with you and just be part of your gang. You know, just hanging out and, you know, with my cigar and getting to run down and chase off the chickens. That's going to be brilliant. So who's going out there? How many people are going to be running that? I wouldn't say there's going to be many, or is there quite a lot of lunatics going out for the first one?
So, I mean, there's some people I know, and there's some other people that have been quite successful in the Beyond the Ultimate thing. I don't know the exact numbers, I haven't looked, it doesn't really matter, but I know that you've got to have either done the jungle or the ice with Beyond the Ultimate, or spine race, one of the spine races, to sort of be qualified as such that you're capable of going out. They're doing a pre-race acclimatization trek if people want to do that. I'm not sure what I'm doing yet. I haven't booked my flights yet because I'm just umming and ahhing, like, with time away from work, putting the dogs to kennels. I am going to go out early, but it's probably going to be about a week before the race I'll go out.
We'll give a quick mention to Beyond the Ultimate is the organizer, ladies and gentlemen. As you say, they do the jungle and the ice. I'll put it in the notes. Well worth having a little look at them. And then, when is it, John? And is entry still open?
Entries, I'm not sure if they're still open, actually. You can check on their website, though. Yeah. But it's the 26th of July. So,
Jesus Christ. Yeah.
So it's a month's time before the race starts. So I'll be going out in about 3 weeks' time. But yeah, it's basically full steam ahead now with the training. I'm getting some physiological testing done to check my bloods, check my iron status, things like that on Wednesday. And then I'll reassess that a few weeks later when I've done some more training. And then I'll start sleeping at altitude as well, which requires me moving the generator into the house upstairs every night. And I'll pop that at a higher altitude. So I'll try and sleep at 3,400 meters, I think it was last night. So yeah, it's just trying to basically get as much exposure as I can, which is, it's not as ideal as living out there. But the one thing I like is that if I went out to Kyrgyzstan now,
yeah,
I do some training out there, but here I've got everything that's measurable at home. You know, yes. I'm at the treadmill, I'm at this pace for that long. With this, with the oxygen, I know, well, I'm doing this interval on the bike, I'm doing these sessions, and they're all mapped out. I've got data there that I can look at. So, yeah, I'm not getting the exposure, but I wouldn't work as hard if I was in Kyrgyzstan. Yeah, I'd be on the mountain, but then food-wise, what am I eating out there? It's all unknown. I can target my training very hard now for another few weeks, then go out like a week where actually I'm going out for the week before when my training is done. It's just then going to be getting that 24 hours a day of altitude, and I'll try and go a little bit higher out there. So I'm just utilizing every opportunity to get as much out of it as possible. So that's what I mean by preparation for people going out from the UK. I go above and beyond stuff just to make sure I try and turn up in tip-top ability to perform.
Brilliant, John. And will you come back on the show afterwards? Because I know that we've gone on a lot. You know, you've given so much information. But above and beyond, now that would be a cracking name for your coaching company. Obviously, I've trademarked it, and I'm just adding it now on Website International. But yeah, John, listen, I can't thank you. You know, when you come back as well, we'll talk as well about your dogs and a little bit more in depth about other stuff as well. John, I can't thank you enough. I've been geeked out of my mind. Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to follow John, you're on Instagram, aren't you? What's your handle on that, John? Handle?
Is that what you call it? It's John Shield Runs Ultras. John's just J-O-N, and then it's underscore Shield, S-H-I-E-L-D, underscore Runs underscore Ultras.
Cool. I'll put that in the notes as well. And you're all
my fans. Yeah. All the fans. I expect to have more followers than Gary House now, right?
Oh, Gary. See you later, Gary. Gary's a friend of ours, the show. That's impossible. I don't know how he's done that. He's got it from genuine people. And I've scrolled and they all are genuine people. Gary, there's the link to Gary House. Gary House, Google him as well. Guy's a legend. But yeah, so you can have a look at John on TikTok, Instagram. Also, though, get yourselves down to Strava. John's on that. And as you say, he's got his hints and tips on that. And you can see where he's training and actually where he is on the races and stuff. You know, with the Beyond...
The Ultimate.
The Ultimate. They'll have trackers, won't you? We'll be able to follow you.
Yeah, absolutely. It's all they're basically they're investors in Spine Race as well. So they've got a link. But yeah, it's very much the same way. You go onto their website, they go live, put the trackers on, and you can generally follow it quite accurately, unless it's the jungle when you sometimes look like you're in Bolivia and you're not, you're in Peru. But that's how trackers work out in the jungle, not very well. But yeah. it should all be live and trackable out there.
John, listen, thank you. Thanks for spending a good time there. Thanks ever so much. And everybody, get up and run and follow John. John, thanks ever so much. And we'll speak to you, well, the start of August. In a bit.
Yeah. Cheers, mate. You're a legend. Thanks, mate.
Cheers, bye.
Cheers.